Representing the celestial body in the state legislature, on the left, this is Jim DeBacchus.
And on the right, representing the lunch pail, hard hat arena of the House, I am Greg Hughes.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the political center. I stand on the sidelines and watch these two. Today, we're going to talk about attendance at Utah party caucus meetings this week. Is Mitt Romney another has-been Michael Dukakis? Or is he making a meaningful contribution to policy? And Malaysia Flight 370, is there a Utah connection? First, this news. I'm Natalie Gochner, and you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, a lively and informative conversation about politics and current issues facing the state. I'm joined on the left by Senator Jim DeBacchus. Welcome, Jim.
Hello.
And on the right by my friend Greg Hughes.
Good
Welcome,
morning,
Greg.
Natalie.
So, in our next segment, we're going to talk about the governor's veto signing period, any kind of fallout from the 2014 session, maybe even some political races of interest. But first, let's talk about what we saw happen this week with Mitt Romney in a Wall Street Journal opinion piece where he took on President Obama and Hillary Clinton and their foreign policy record, essentially saying that they've weakened America's influence in the world.
Talk about stating the obvious. This is like shooting fish in a barrel, Natalie. This here, I think his editorial, his op-ed, was so it's just true. When you have Assad, where you put this bright red line and you're saber rattling, we're not going to handle this, the murdering and the genocide and all of this. And then Putin swoops in, says, no, this is how it's going to work from here on out. And the guy gets to run the show.
Okay.
If that doesn't give him the confidence to now go into Ukraine, into Crimea, and say, we're going to run the show yet again, that's what you're seeing. You're seeing, and I think Mitt Romney's op-ed is in critical junctions where America needed to step forward. There was a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of let's wait and see. And then what you ultimately get is a series of bad choices. It's bad or worse is what you get when you're not leading out front. And I think it's been a lead from behind approach that this president has taken. And, you know, Crimea is one of the products of that.
Governor Romney clearly made the case that we've been left with no good options, Jim. Defend your president here.
He's
our
right.
President.
I mean, the last time this happened, Vladimir Putin decided to march into Georgia, and George W. was the president, and he dithered. And the truth is, it wouldn't matter who the president is. This is a place that's adjacent to Russia. There is a historical tie there. It's treacherous. It's bullying. It's miserable. It's not right. It's morally and ethically reprehensible. But what is any American president supposed to do? Do we declare war on Putin? Do we send troops in?
I think a stronger hand earlier on, and I think that's the point of the op-ed, would have made such decisions like the one you're seeing from Putin right now less viable. I think that because you have not seen the United States leading out, being a strong voice, it seemed like a viable option, and here we are.
You know, let's go to the politics of it just a little bit. What's the calculus in Mitt Romney's mind speaking out right now? It's really interesting to me because a lot of times, you know, you run for your second try at president, you don't win, and you just kind of fade off into the sunset. But he's still posting things in the Wall Street Journal. What do you think, Jim?
Well, you know,
with those
luminous names like Michael Dukakis and Walter Mondale and and what was the guy who couldn't spell potato? You know, there's no faster road to being forgotten forever than losing as a presidential candidate. And you know, there'll be a sputter or two, and this is one
you
of
see
them.
You see it as a sputter, Greg. Do you see something more for Governor Romney down the road?
Well, I think there's a lot of people looking at the current bench of Republican potential candidates for president and would love to see Mitt Romney step into that space again. I think that what he's really doing is these foreign policy issues are ones that he articulated very clearly during a campaign and was frankly rebuffed. And I think hey, remember this? Remember what we talked about? Here we are. And I think there is a very important point to be made that some of these areas of foreign policy, just because you're enjoying peace doesn't mean that this stuff happens by itself. There needs to be leadership in this world, and I think he's connecting some dots that he tried to connect during a presidential race and I think are as relevant today. Probably they're more relevant today than they were when he made the case back in the 2012 election.
We can't leave it right there. There's one more thing to be said because
I think Jim could tell I was going to transition, but he's getting his voice in.
Very soon, the final American troops will be leaving Afghanistan after the longest American war ever. This is what happens. And for what? We're being asked to leave by the president. As far as I can tell, the minute the American troops are gone, the Taliban will be back. What can you look those families in the eye? What can you say about this $1 trillion that we've spent there that makes that worthwhile? And the president said, we're not sending troops to Syria. We're not going to bomb Iran. There's 100 million people there. I mean, this could go on endlessly. But just what exactly in the real world, other than say it's Obama's fault? I heard the other day the San Andreas was Obama's fault. I mean, you can blame the president, but the world simply is the world. And sometimes there's things we can't do.
It does feel like we have a weakened influence globally.
Well, we've been on an apology tour for over, you know, now we're in what, six, 7 years? How long's the president been the president? He started an apology tour. This is an apology tour started by President Obama when he was first elected. Let me just say this. When Afghanistan was in its war with the USSR, there's been books written, Charlie Wilson's War, where when the American, the CIA's influence in helping the Mujahideen fight the Soviets, when the Soviets pulled out, we pulled out as well, and there was a power vacuum. I think much of what you've seen in Afghanistan was an attempt to not see that kind of power vacuum happen again. Has it worked? No. I've been so disappointed by the level of corruption in Afghanistan and the amount of resources sent there that have gone nowhere. But I think there was a very good argument why you didn't want to just pull stakes, leave that area of the world completely unattended after a war like the one we had.
Jim, I'm impressed that on both sides of the aisle we got the term Mujahideen mentioned.
The Muj.
Hey, another kind of international issue, but Malaysia Flight 370. I mean, I don't know a possible Utah connection.
I do. We couldn't find Jim. We were trying to find Jim to do this radio show all morning long. He was gone. I thought he hooked up with those Malaysians on some tour.
Jim, is there any flight? Do you have any Utah connection in your mind?
The plane. Where's the plane? No, I can't think of one. But it is. I think it's been so interesting to watch the media watch the plane. Clearly, there's a ratings bump. And if you look at the regularly million or 1.2 million people that watch Anderson Cooper, and it's up to 4 million, and who knows where Fox has gone with this. I mean, these understand what's going on. They just love this, and they milk it and hype it and get every expert and every kind of new sounder and title because they make a lot of money off it. It may just turn out, and I've been kind of glued to it.
It does have that effect, doesn't it?
It's like a Reese's peanut butter cup. It's the perfect combination of reality TV and the Lost television show. I mean, we've combined it somehow with a missing plane in real life. I mean, who can't watch this?
I have flown twice this week, and it's changed how I feel when I'm up in the air. I'm just like seeing the back rooms of the
planes.
Apparently,
you can cut a right, and no one knows where you're going, okay? Who knew this? I didn't.
It's just really stunning. Another real quick issue. We had an announcement yesterday about the interconnect. And the ski resort's common interest in joining these ski resorts. How did you read that announcement, both of you, real quickly?
I'm nervous. I'm nervous that in another 20 or 30 years, we're even going to have ski resorts. I mean, I think this global warming and climate change is very serious. And as you begin to think generationally, Greg, you not may be worrying about your kids skiing and your grandkids, but
it's changed in my lifetime. I'll say that. Greg.
In Switzerland, they have structures there that people actually walked over dry land to bring the materials there that have been covered with ice for 100 years. So, if you have a population that has more institutional knowledge or memory of the lands they live on, you wouldn't be as scared as Jim is. The issue is this. We have this great prospect where we're going to look at mountain transportation, how to connect these resorts through mountain transportation. It's one that has a bipartisan effort. The interlink and connecting resorts themselves has been a smaller effort, and I hope it's not confused by the public in terms of the big effort that we're looking at.
You're talking about the Mountain Accord.
The Mountain Accord is a big, giant effort with multiple stakeholders and bipartisan support, and that is very different than interlink, which is the attempt to connect these resorts. And, I just hope that there's an understanding that there is a big difference between the two.
In our next segment, we're going to talk about the caucuses and upcoming political races. This is Both Sides of the Aisle.
This is Jim DeBacchus, still on the left.
And Greg Hughes on the right.
And I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. And I represent the political moderates in the state. And a lot of the political moderates aren't in the legislature, has been my observation. And we
the fence sitters.
And we had the typical fireworks the last day of the session where, you know, you're going till midnight. All these legislators have bills they want to see action on. They've worked through committees. Senate's passed some, House has passed some, but it takes both bodies to act. And in the end, there's all this competition between both bodies, which ones are going to go, and the clock's ticking. It actually seems like kind of child's play to me, Greg and Jim. What's going on?
Well, if a
political moderate's watching, you don't go to dinner the last night of the session. You get these bills passed.
You
problem solved.
You don't saunter as a Senate at 10 p.m. at night while we're trying to get bills passed, Jim.
You know, let's face it, I'm in the telestial kingdom. Greg is right there, right in the middle. You know, he's in leadership. He's deciding. So they have this... They have this screwball method, which I assume has been done as long as we've had a legislature. Dare not one body get ahead of the other in bills passed. So, you know, there are reports back and, okay, you've done your two bills,
this
now we'll
like
do
sibling
ours.
Rivalry.
You've done this much amount, now we're going to It really gets...
And let me tell you, the way we look at this so differently as a House versus a Senate, they have a report called the Golden Rule Report, and it shows the productivity of each body in passing for final passage in the last 3 days, the Senate, how they pass House bills for final passage and the number, and the House, how it passes Senate bills for final passage and the number.
Do unto others as you'd have others do unto you.
Yes, and the Senate is absolutely confused that this ought to be one for one, that A ought to be absolutely the same. Got news for the Senate. There are 75 of us over there in the House that need to get our bills passed. There's 29 of you. You should be further ahead on how you pass the bills than we are because of the volume.
The Senate's the firstborn, Jim.
They're like cockroaches over there in the House.
Oh, my gosh.
You know,
they're the House of Lords.
So many of them. Have you ever been in there? They're just diving over the chairs. Everybody's talking. They're howling.
Yeah,
it's out of control.
Let me tell you what ends up happening. Because they can't get going and go quickly. At the last hour and a half of the session this year particularly, it's like a Walking Dead episode where everyone's eating each other and just trying to
cannibalism.
Yeah, it was disgusting. We had House members fighting each other to get to the top of the Senate board, begging senators to make a motion to move a House bill to the top of the third reading calendar. It was chaos over there because they can't get their job done in any kind of quick way. So then everyone goes into panic mode with a half hour left. Every House member is trying to get their bill up above at the top of the board. It was a nightmare.
So we had a resolution this session. I'm not solving this problem. But we had a resolution in support of the people of Ukraine.
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say procedurally.
Okay. Well,
I don't know how Greg did this, but it was over on third reading calendar, and it was going to be there forever and ever. It wasn't some kind of priority thing and whatever. And I just said, Greg, and somehow there it was, and it came up. And I interrupt you, though. People don't even know what we're talking about.
This is the bill that would have given local option sales tax expanded authority.
I thought we were on the Ukraine here.
I thought you were talking about the Ukraine.
Well, I thought you went backwards.
No.
Okay. Well, so on the Ukraine, who is it that didn't support a resolution in support of the people
in
of Ukraine?
In solidarity with the people of Ukraine and calling V. Putin a bully.
Who are these people?
I will not name them by name. Joe McCarthy will come from the grave and do this for us. This was a resolution by my good friend Jim DeBacchus, who has a history with and an experience in Russia and Ukraine, has friends over there. And what's happening over there is deplorable, and it is something worth our attention and condemning the action happening by Putin and Russia going into Ukraine. So I thought this resolution would be a no-brainer. This was a kumbaya. Look, we've got a Democrat actually looking like he wants to be tough. I mean, this doesn't happen very often. Let's embrace him. Let's make sure he doesn't, receive a bad reception. 11 of my Republican colleagues somehow thought no. Like I said, Joe McCarthy's going to handle this. There's a ghost on his way.
It'll happen.
To some homes.
Hey, so
okay?
Now we enter the veto signing period, or the bill signing period, I should say, 20 days after the end of the session. governor has. Are we going to see any vetoes? Are there any bills at risk, Greg?
Absolutely not. We do our job, as you should. There isn't one single solitary bill that ought to be vetoed. We do our job.
Did
we
you
vet
read
it
the bills,
properly.
Greg?
Absolutely. This was a masterpiece of a session. Every single bill deserves to be law of the land. This governor is a smart one. He will not veto a single bill.
My experience is there's always one or two, and often they're just technical corrections. As they go through the legal review, the mess of the session sometimes creates unintended consequences. How do you see it, Jim?
Well, you know, it's hard when you
disagree with most of the bills.
When you lose a vote 28-1, you know, occasionally you need to stand up and you need to go, you know, maybe I'm seeing the world wrong this way.
Oh, you think that way. Jim, congratulations.
But then I thought, no, I'm
no,
not.
Okay, all
okay,
right.
So this was the OTA bill, which sometimes when people dress up in a very menacing, difficult, awkward, horrendous way, and they begin to not exactly brandish a weapon, but threaten innocence, there were police forces that would talk to them about disorderly conduct. This bill of OTA's took the quiver of disorderly conduct out of the police arsenal so that it really creates a great utopia for camouflaged, gun-toting, backpacking, black-faced with all of that tarp kind of stuff, hunters that want to get on and intimidate people with big guns. But it doesn't do much for Utah families. The governor ought to veto that one.
Greg, if I'm sitting at Olive Garden and I see someone dressed up like that, I fear for my life.
So what you do is you pass a bill that doesn't allow that to happen. But what you can't do is you can't have laws in this state, and we do not have gun laws by jurisdiction. They are state laws. What you can't do is have someone abide by the law and then have them cited for disorderly conduct if they have not broken a law. The bill allows for those conversations to still occur with law enforcement where they can ask the person how they're doing, kind of get a sense of their mindset, what they're doing. But if you don't like the scenario, make the conduct illegal. Do not allow it to be legal, and then have the ability to cite someone for disorderly conduct when they have not broken a law. It's about as intuitive as you get.
So Greg's saying no bills will be vetoed. You have one that you'd like to see vetoed.
I got tons of them.
I'm predicting there'll be a couple on technical problems.
They'll do it. The governor's going to feel like he has to do it just to show that he's a governor. Maybe that's it. But nothing that deserves to be vetoed, certainly.
Tonight are the caucus meetings for the Republicans. Jim, you've had yours. How did they turn out?
They turned out great, and it was wonderful, the LDS Church, to say, go to your Democratic caucus tonight. It's very important that you go to the Democratic caucus tonight. We're canceling all LDS meetings tonight, Tuesday. This was Tuesday night. I'm not sure if they said that about the Republican one, but that helped our attendance.
Greg, you look like you have something to say.
I do. I just want, you know, I found that the Democrats to find a way to recycle phone booths and use them for caucus meetings. It's such an innovative way to use an outdated form of communication. Phone booths were alive and well on Tuesday night. Congratulations, Jim. Appreciate the use of those old phone booths. But tonight at our Republican caucus, I think there were messages from pulpits across Utah saying that Tuesday nights and Thursday nights ought to be reserved for civic participation. It is my hope that many, many people attended, all kidding aside, their Democrat caucuses, but certainly the Republican caucuses. More participation means a better outcome.
So if I've got my date right, tomorrow or tonight, I guess at 5 o'clock,
yes.
Filing deadlines
at 5.
Will we see any intra-party serious another challenger in the Mia Love race, Greg?
You know, I don't know if we will.
A lot of people thought when Matheson dropped out that another strong candidate would emerge. We have Bob Fuhrer in that race, Mia Love, both Republicans. I'll let you speak to the Democrats in a minute, Jim, but
you know, she's
not jumping in, I guess you're saying.
No. You said strong. That was the key word to use, a strong candidate. You know, she's raised a lot of money in anticipation of a tough challenge against an incumbent Democrat in that seat. She doesn't have that, but she still has the resources raised. That will be a very difficult race. The RNCC, the Republican National Congressional Committee, has pulled out of this race with its resources, looking at other competitive races where they want to beat an incumbent Democrat. You might see that. You might see someone see now that it's believed to be a solid Republican seat now. I don't know if you'll see that or not.
I'm curious if you think there'll be any late filers helpful on the Democratic side, either in that race or another, Jim. And is it fair to say we're going to have an all-Republican congressional delegation very shortly?
No, it's not fair to say that at all.
I didn't think he'd agree with me, Greg.
It's not fair. It's true, but it might not be fair to Jim.
Wait, the surprise candidate of this next election season is going to be Doug Owens.
Who?
You're
Can you
not
spell
gonna
that, sir?
Find a smarter guy, Yale Law School, University of Utah, bright guy, in total touch with the community. He's going to be a great congressman and a great candidate. And Mia, she is not going to do well. I keep hearing from Republicans she is a weak candidate. She just is not very, doesn't have much depth, and it's going to come out during the election.
Greg, will depth be a problem?
No, it will not be a problem at all. Mia is very articulate. This is her second rodeo in terms of a congressional run. She's going to be better than she was last time. The thing I love is that, you know, American citizens still love royalty, and we love names. And you know, Owens has that, certainly has the name of his father who had served as a good congressman on the Democrat side. You know, it's just another born on third base, thinks he hit a triple kid. You know, he's given the name, he's given the top opportunity. Of course, he went to Yale. I'm so surprised, Jim. I mean, that's kind of the way royalty ascends, right?
You
is that
like
how it works?
Huntsman and Levitt and Bush.
I'm just saying, man.
And Romney.
This is your Matheson. This is your Owens. This is your path.
And your kid one day, he's not going to catch a break, is he, when she runs for
Sophie?
Something? They're going to say,
she'll
because you're old man.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the political center. On the left, I'm joined by Jim DeBacchus, and on the right by Greg Hughes. Let's stay on the political topics for a minute. Dan Snar, former mayor of Murray, has filed for the county commission race to take Dave Wild's old seat. Snar's almost nationally known for his mustache. What do you think there?
A clear advantage in a debate. No one can get near the man physically because of those spike-like, you know, protrusions coming out of his face with that greased-up mustache on either side. You can't stand next to him to debate him. That's an advantage.
True. I've heard people
on the
Murray City Council say that there must be some sort of OSHA requirement, you know, preventing that because it's dangerous.
It is. It is. No one can get near him, literally.
Imagine how wonderful it would be if the rest of the state were Salt Lake, like Salt Lake County, where there are actually races, where there's actually contests, where things are competitive, where we have a two-party system, where they keep an eye on each other, that simply would make so much better a state.
Yeah. Well, and what's our latest check-in on Mike Lee? What are you guys seeing there? I mean, I know it's not his year for an election, but he certainly set him up as someone that is, there's a lot of very qualified people who are either going to find their way into the governor's race or the Senate race. And Mike Lee perhaps looks more vulnerable than Governor Herbert right now.
I'll tell you this about Mike, or Senator Lee. He has hired a former colleague in Derrick Brown I think he's a deputy chief of staff. He's here working the Utah side. A colleague of ours announced on the last night, Ryan Wilcox, that he's leaving the legislature to be the Northern Utah District Director. Getting these lawmakers who have a touch with constituency, have a touch with their own constituencies and understand the electorate is going to help Senator Lee in his service as U.S. Senator and give him a greater, even stronger touch with the people here in Utah. It's all upside for Senator Lee.
You're talking about a touch with rationality with a guy like Derrick Brown. I mean, Mike Lee is so out there, and he will never be forgiven. How can fiscal conservatives ever forgive him for wasting? Remember, our state budget's $13 billion. He wasted $23 billion with that guy from Texas in that childish shutdown the government. Mm-hmm. There are no circumstances that he's going to be having that seat again in Washington. He is so out of touch.
My Senator Lee comment would be that, it's my understanding, we still have not been repaid as a state for keeping open the national parks during the shutdown. That's going to take an act of Congress. And that
Senator, literally.
Senator Lee better get that money.
Yep.
That's just a given. We need to go on to our weekly gripes. I have one. You know, I don't know how sexy it is, but I'm a little disappointed in the Interconnect ski announcement. And that is that I thought the timing was just off. I'm a big fan of the Mountain Accord work. It's well-funded. It's well-supported. There's a lot of great studies to come out from that. I thought it would have been better for the ski industry to stand down and let that play out. Jim?
Three studies, $600,000. The Utah legislature comes out, nothing. We're going to study Medicare expansion. Now the governor is going to Washington.
You knew Medicaid expansion was going to make it into the program the one
governor,
more time.
The governor's going to Washington, and the president's going to say, here's your check for $130 million, and he's going to negotiate and say, no, we don't want that much. The president's going to say, this will cover 123,000 people, and the governor's going to say, no, I need to negotiate. We want less people covered. Hello.
My rant would be that I've had to re-explain this to Jim 5 weeks in a row, 5 shows in a row, but I won't go there. My rant this week is that you had a state Senate who thought at 10 o'clock at night it was appropriate to walk off the floor of the Senate to caucus on an individual bill or not do the work of the people when time was running short. It's disappointing, and it goes back to this whole workload, and they want to see as many bills passed on our side. We have more than twice as many members. It's a waste of a finite amount of time that this branch of government has.
Give me your quick take on Governor Herbert this session. Did he do a good job, Jim?
He did a pretty good job, except on Medicaid expansion. Other things,
Greg,
he was okay.
How about you?
Governor Herbert did a good job. There are some things that frustrated me, certainly, but all in all, I think his parting comments on the floor of the House when the session was over was very gracious, and given all that had happened prior, I thought we ended on a positive note.
Very good. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. The program is produced by Elizabeth Dee and Tyler Ford. We hope you've enjoyed the conversation.